This is controversial because people aren't exactly clear how the external auditor would fulfill these duties and meet this standard.
Hello, and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, which brings financial reporting, ESG, audit, and risk teams together in one platform on a journey toward assured integrated reporting. Just like Dorothy brought Scarecrow, Tin Man, Lion, and Toto together on a journey toward discovering their hidden strengths. This episode is actually part two of our chat with Matt Kelly of Radical Compliance, who brings a GRC perspective to everything that we're talking about, so governance, risk, and compliance. And this week, we wanted to ask about a proposal the PCAOB is considering. Steve, can you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, so for those who may not be familiar, the PCAOB is basically the primary regulator of external financial statement auditors that audit public companies. They are the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. So when they issue a proposal, or if a proposal becomes a standard, that can directly affect the amount of work that those auditors are doing. And as you might guess, typically that means that auditors are going to be doing more work. Well, recently they issued a proposal that would require, among other things, and we'll have Matt summarize this for us, but would require auditors to take a look at any non-compliance with laws and rules and regulations that might be going on at that company as part of their financial statement audit. Now, Matt, I'll turn this over to you and welcome you again to the show. Appreciate you coming back to talk about NOCLAR. What would you tell our audience about what the PCAOB has proposed?
It's great to be back here. So the NOCLAR rule proposal, we should say, this is controversial because people aren't exactly clear how the external auditor would fulfill these duties and meet this standard. It requires an external audit firm to look for any material non-compliance risks. And when you think through what does that actually mean, for the audit firm to know what your material non-compliance risks would be, it would have to know what all of your potential compliance risks would be so it could winnow them down to only the material ones. Well, that's a big expansion in what the audit firm would need to know. So how are they going to hire experts to figure that out? How are they going to have a conversation with you, the company, about what the material non-compliance risks are? What if the audit firm and the compliance team at your company or the legal team, what if opinions differ there about what is or isn't a material compliance risk? And then lastly, what if they do find a material non-compliance issue, they have to report it to the board and think about the position that might put you, the audit, internal audit or compliance team in. Whether your external auditor says, well, we found this issue, it seems material, but by the way, your internal team didn't find it. That doesn't make you look very good. So this is likely to be expensive. This is likely to be difficult. A lot of people wonder if the audit firm is acting as this kind of shadow compliance function, isn't that something management is supposed to do, not an external auditor? So there are some sort of theoretical, philosophical objections to this, and it's quite controversial. The PCAOB, we're not exactly sure when they're going to adopt the final rule or what it might look like compared to what I just described.
Why was this proposed in the first place?
It was proposed because there are a lot of instances of serious corporate misconduct that does lead to a hammered share price, and investors pay that hammered share price, but it doesn't involve an actual restatement of the financial results. So arguably, an auditor, an external auditor, could turn around and say, well, the financial statements are all fine. Internal control over financial reporting is solid. Our job is done. While the company, at the same time, is burning down around its ears over some other legal issue. I think one good example of that would be Wells Fargo, which in the 2010s had one compliance infraction after another. For years, they were paying billions upon billions in regulatory fines, in litigation. They had CEOs hauled in front of Congress and then promptly fired. But throughout all of that, it never had to restate its financial results. So it was getting clean audit opinions, but the bank was a mess. And a lot of lawmakers were rightly saying, how can these things coexist at the same time? Shouldn't there be some sort of outside person to try and investigate on behalf of investors about what risks there might be? And well, that would typically be an external audit firm. So that kind of sort of brought us around to where we are with this NOCLAR proposal, except even the audit firms are not entirely comfortable with this expansion of their duties. Audit committees do not like this at all. General counsels hate this because it might involve them having to disclose a legal risk to an outside party, which is the audit firm. And so there's a lot of pushback. But at the same time, there is a compelling argument that how can it be that you can have clean financials and be a total disaster and nobody thinks to raise the alarm to investors? You know, Wells Fargo is not the only example we could cite here, and people are not wrong to say that shouldn't be the case. So that has brought us to this rather odd place we are with NOCLAR right now.
Do you find it interesting that auditors have been, again, it's hard to characterize exactly how they've responded, but let's say a lukewarm reception, because the cynic in me would say that, well, hey, this is going to mean more work, more inquiries, more audit fees, more money. And that's a little bit cynical. And so to me, that, you know, audit firms wouldn't be really excited about this seems a little bit odd, but perhaps that's because they perceive this as being both uncertain and risky. I mean, do you have an opinion about their response, the audit community and their reaction generally?
I think that the audit community is not entirely comfortable with the potential liability that they might face if they too gave a clean NOCLAR opinion, because I guess that's what we'd call it now. But then it comes out subsequently that there was a compliance failure that the company missed, the external auditor missed, but the external auditor, like, you gave us assurance that we didn't have any of these material issues, and now we do. Investors have a funny way of deciding on their own what is or isn't a material risk. So I think that audit firms are not entirely comfortable with the potential liability here. I think they are aware that a lot of this is out of the realm of their expertise. Or if it is something where they have some experts, they would probably want to sell that as consulting services, not bring it over to the audit side. If you are auditing a client for, say, cybersecurity risks or privacy risks or anti-corruption risks, how does this constrain your consulting capabilities, which is a lucrative revenue stream for a lot of audit firms? And really, when we say the audit firms, we mean maybe about 10 really large audit firms. Smaller audit firms are never going to be able to do this. They will not be able to hire the experts to keep pace with this. So I can see why a lot of the audit industry is, you know, like you said, lukewarm about this prospect at best. But really, it is more that the corporations, I think, are terrified of much higher audit fees for what will probably be nothing at the end of it. Most of the time, most companies do not have material compliance failures happening at their business. So they're going to be paying a tremendous amount of money to get the same assurance they had before, and the juice is not worth the squeeze here. That is, I think, the general stance of the corporate world. And they are not wrong to make that case either.
Are you relying on desktop tools and shared drives? Stuck in a vicious, never-ending cycle of back-and-forth emails? Wish you had more time to proactively manage risk? Stop wasting valuable time corralling colleagues and updating status reports and start spending more time on what matters with Workiva. Create alignment across key stakeholders, yes, all of them, with centralized collaboration. Drive better business decisions with insights on demand and spend more time on value-added work by automating all those awful repetitive tasks. Plus, connect your GRC processes with your ESG and financial reporting all in the same platform. Seriously. See why audit and risk teams love Workiva at workiva.com/risk. That's workiva.com/risk.
But is this a case where people aren't understanding the fundamental purpose and limitations of an external financial statement audit? I mean, you make a point that says, well, most companies probably aren't having these issues, which is why you don't see this happening all the time. When it does, it happens, and it happens in a big way. as a former financial statement auditor, and I didn't do it for a long time, but I mean, I understood, hey, we're looking for material risks. We're not looking for everything. There's no possible way you can audit for that. I'm anchored on that understanding because I used to do that for a living. Do you think there's maybe some incorrect assumptions as to what an audit is and is not with respect to these types of issues?
Well, I think that there are certain voices in the investor community. They're really trying to say any sort of loss of value, a swift, unexpected loss of value, must be therefore due to fraud. Now, is it fraud as in somebody stealing money, or fraud as in management was incompetent and they broke the laws and now suddenly the company is a mess and they're looking at regulatory fines? But, you know, how are we describing fraud, and what is the auditor's role in trying to root this out? I mean, that would be one interpretation here. I would want to maybe give just a minute or two of perspective from people who say, no, this is not a big deal. And I know some people in the compliance community, actually, who think that, you know, this isn't really the end of the world because audit firms already have to look for fraud risks. So they go and they ask the company, are you aware of any frauds? What is your fraud risk management process? And the auditor studies that, and then they try and figure out what the fraud risk really is. And I've had people say you could essentially do the same with compliance risks. And it's really just a different sort of misconduct, but it's the same sort of way to think through what is your process to manage all of that. I would draw the distinction that with financial fraud, which I think external auditors have a good handle on, there's missing money at the end of the day. And you know how to look around for money. But with compliance risks, you can have some really serious misconduct and it doesn't involve an awful lot of money. So there would be audit firms who would say, the money's all there. There's no material misstatement. There's no material amount of money that's missing. So there's nothing wrong here financially. And I'm not a lawyer. So therefore, I'm not going to weigh in on this privacy risk or this anti-corruption risk or something like that. And I see that perspective too. I don't know what the right answer is here. I don't think that the PCAOB has fully come to a conclusion. We should remember that when they adopted the proposal, that was on a 3-2 vote, and the two professional auditors on the board both said, this is not a good idea, don't do this. And the three majority on the PCAOB, who are not auditors, which by law they're not supposed to be, they said, we have to do this anyways in the interest of investor protection. So I don't know what the right answer here is. I think it's a very difficult question with persuasive arguments on both sides.
Well, how much are companies talking about this right now?
That is a good question. I know that when the proposal was looking for public comment, they got quite a lot. The PCAOB did, and there were a lot of corporate interests who stepped up and said, we do not like this idea. Then they reopened the proposal for more comment. They had a few workshops and other sort of a listening tour one day back in mid-March where they spent the whole day with various roundtables of corporate interest to hear their opinions. So the PCAOB knows this is a big deal. We have to hear these discussions. I am aware of at least some board audit committees who have been asking about NOCLAR, and they've been asking the external auditor, what do you think of this? The only one where I've had a lot of gossip brought to my ears, the external auditor did say that this is going to be fire and brimstone and damnation if we do this. I think to scare the audit committee to make sure that that company also was on the team anti-NOCLAR. But I have heard others who have said that they just want to know what is this and how will it affect the audit whenever this might come to pass. And we don't even know when that might be.
I'm super curious to hear what private companies are saying about it too, if it's weighing on their minds in terms of like, oh, one more thing we have to think about before we go public.
That is, I think, a very valid question, Catherine, and nobody really knows yet.
I do think that when you start to add all of the additional just costs and effort and work and risks, potential risks anyway, of being a public company, I mean, I just say that, you know, anecdotally, the conversations that I have is that, going public is one option for a private company. I don't think that's the first option or the most preferred option anymore, like it probably would have been, heck, 5 and especially, 10 plus years ago, for sure.
Yeah, very valid.
Well, Matt, we appreciate you joining us again to talk about the NOCLAR proposal. Always great to get to get your perspective. Now, I'm wondering, we have been talking about NOCLAR, the abbreviation for that, or acronym NOCLAR. I'm wondering if audit was an acronym, or maybe GRC was an acronym. I realize it's a little bit off the wall, but for a closing question of the day, do you have any thought of what audit or GRC might stand for?
Oh, well, clearly GRC should stand for Get Radical Compliance. Comes out every Friday. And it's free. And as to audit, I was tinkering around with that idea and like anything detail, but I had nothing else for like the U and the I and the T. So I'm going to pass on audit. But I had a good one for GRC.
Oh, my goodness. That's a mic drop right there. I don't even want to jump in, although I am. Catherine, you're always good at this. I mean, did you come up with something clever on either of them?
Oh, no. For GRC, that's what I was going to say. Go read Radical Compliance.
I second that. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I do get it every Friday. And Matt knows that anytime there's some interesting financial reporting thing in there, I'm always going to reply with a quip or a thought. So would definitely recommend the audience check it out every Friday. And it's free and it's well-written and interesting and informative. Matt Kelly, thank you so much for joining us again on Off the Books. Always appreciate the insights. My name is Steve Soder. That was Catherine Tsai, and this has been Off the Books, presented by Workiva. Please subscribe, leave a review, tell your buddies if you like the show. And again, if you're watching this on YouTube, we would love to hear what you think about NOCLAR or anything else for that matter in the comments on YouTube. Otherwise, you can send us a note at offthebooks@workiva.com. And in the meantime, surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.